This evening, the topic, I adjusted the topic a little bit, thought it would speak about, make a little overview of chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita is the opulences of the absolute, or Vibhuti Yoga. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third chapter, Suta Goswami uses this word vibhutis in the section that's describing the incarnations of the personality of Godhead. One of the six questions in the first chapter of the first canto is the sages asking Sutta to describe those forms of the Lord in which he appears within this world. And so in a summary way, some of the principal incarnations of the Lord, avatars, are identified. First, the Purusha avatars, the forms of the Lord that create the material universe, they're described. And then the Lila avatars and some of the Shaktivesha avatars and forms of the Lord as they appear, principal ones, are identified. Then this term vibhutis is also presented. And what the term vibhuti means is, as Krishna concludes this, the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, a spark of his splendor. So the splendor is like the rays under the sun. It's this, Krishna is the splendorous, and then there's his splendor. And then there's a spark of his splendor. So vibhutis are potencies of Krishna that are reflected within this world. Something like when you drive your cars going home, you'll sit in the driver's seat, those of you that are the drivers, and you'll look in your rearview mirror on this side and up here, and you'll see whatever's behind you because the headlights are shining and it's shining into the reflection and you're seeing the reflection. You know there's a car behind you because you see the reflection of their headlight. You don't see their headlight unless you turn around and look at their headlight. But you can just see the reflection of the headlight. So Krishna's vibhutis are like that. In the spiritual world, Krishna is known as Bhagavan because he possesses bhagas, or spiritual opulences, six in number. Principal opulences are six in number. So he's Bhagavan. But if we don't see Bhagavan or the opulences of Bhagavan directly, we may come to know of the presence of the Lord in this realm through the reflection of those opulences that are found in the spiritual world. Those are known as vibhutis. So, chapter 10 is vibhuti yoga, or linking with Krishna by appreciation of how Krishna is present in this world through his vibhutis, through the manifestations of his material potencies. The material potencies, another name of the material potency is Chaya Devi. Chaya means reflection. She is but a reflection of the Lord's internal potency. or as we find in Sri Brahma Samhita, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, is lying on the causal ocean, enjoying his eternal pastimes with his consort Rama Devi. And while he is engaged in his pastimes with Rama Devi, he just happens to notice that the reflection of Rama Devi is idle. She's doing nothing. And he knows that her desire is to do something, not only do something, but to serve. So feeling compassion for the reflection, Chaya Devi, he simply glances upon her. And by glancing upon her, he gives her some service to do. Because within his glance, the time energy and all the living entities who were dormant within the body of Mahavishnu during the stage when he has inhaled, and now he's exhaling, all those living entities are impregnated within the womb of Chaya Devi, and she has some service to do, keeping the living entities very busy. Too much busy, so much busy they don't have time for Krishna consciousness. That much busy. And they'll tell you, we don't have time for Krishna consciousness. We're too busy. We're too busy working. We're too busy spending the fruits of our work. We're too busy trying to enjoy. We're too busy. We don't have time for Krishna consciousness. Maybe we'll come on Janmashtami. Otherwise, we're too busy. So that Chaya feature of the Lord's potencies, if understood properly, can provide an opportunity for the living entities to link with the Supreme. Therefore, Vibhuti Yoga. How to link with the Supreme, even by seeing the features of the material energy, even by looking into your rearview mirror. Even by not seeing Krishna, but to understand the presence of Krishna through his vibhutis within this world, then you can remember Krishna always. Even just by drinking water or looking at the sky and seeing the sun or the moon and the vibhutis of the Lord can give you a sense, an indication, indirect indication of the presence of the Lord here. So, chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita, very interestingly, follows chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita. And chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita ends with Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Krishna is explaining in chapter 10 how to. Devotees always like to ask how to questions. So Krishna is anticipating Arjuna's how to question. How to always remember me, become my devotee, offer your obeisances unto me. Chapter 10 is how to. And one other feature of this is the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita are the support, the basis and support of the first six and the last six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. That makes 18 chapters. Bhagavad Gita is divided into 18 chapters. And the middle six are, everything in Bhagavad Gita is on bhakti. And Prabhupada's translations and purports make sure that we get the message very clearly in case we have some other tendency, a karma tendency or gyan tendency. Prabhupada checkmates us and keeps us on bhakti. But not everybody has the opportunity to read Srila Prabhupada's purports. And when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, our acharyas present that in the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, of course, there's the introduction to what Bhagavad Gita is and gradually an unfolding of the systems of yoga. But strong emphasis is there in the first six chapters of work. How to engage in your prescribed duties, your activity, in such a way that it's not binding upon the performer. Karma palatyag, renouncing the fruits of work. Strong message. Linking with the Supreme through dedication of the fruits of one's work unto the Supreme. Karma yoga. Some people that aren't part of the Hare Krishna movement, if you ask the question, what's the most important verse of Bhagavad Gita? Many persons will say, karma nivarikara se ma paleshu kadachana. That's Bhagavad Gita's message. You're entitled to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of your work. And the fruits of your work should be offered to the Supreme. So that's a very important message of Bhagavad Gita. Non-fruit of work. And the final six chapters of Bhagavad Gita are with a strong emphasis on gyan, giving detailed knowledge of things that were spoken before, but in further detail that point to surrender to Krishna. But some people like the final six chapters of Bhagavad Gita because they're gyan fans. Their inclination is details of knowledge. But the conclusion of the first, what's the final verse of chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita? 647, who knows what that verse is? Yogi nam api sarvesham. No? But he doesn't agree with you. You're okay with that verse? Okay. Yogi namapi sarvesha madgate nantaratmanam shradhavan bhajate yomam sa me yukta utama mataha. Mataha is, Krishna is very humbly saying, it's my opinion, which means it's a fact. Krishna's opinion is, we say something, it's my opinion, blah, blah, blah. It's blah, blah, blah. But when Krishna says, it's my opinion, it's fact. It's a fact that of all the different systems of yoga that he's presented up to that point, there's one amongst them that's the uttama form of yoga. And what's that uttama form of yoga? Shraddhavan bhajate yo mam. To engage in devotional service with great faith. That's the conclusion of all of the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, summarized in that one verse. And then the very next verse, as Krishna says, now I'm going to tell you how to do it. In fact, the next six chapters is Krishna explaining how to do uttam bhakti, the uttam form of yoga. And those six chapters, they form the essence of the whole of Bhagavad Gita. The whole of Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Mahabharata. And where is it placed in Mahabharata? Right in the middle. And then the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, they're the essence of Bhagavad Gita. And these chapter 9, most confidential knowledge, in chapter 10, they're in the middle of the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. And the last verse, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Mad Yaji Mam Namaskuru, is explained in chapter 10. So it's a very important chapter. Although some people, I know I was one of those people, as a new devotee reading chapter 10, you know, all those opulences, I just like skim through it like, phew, what's next? But it's very important. Very important. How to always remember Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives these three metaphors to help understand the structure of Bhagavad Gita and the importance of the explanation of the process of bhakti and where it's placed. He gives the example of a house. Of course, you know, our structures now are somewhat different, but in a simple village setting, you have like a little A-frame. And of the parts of the house that's most important, what's the most important? The support beam that holds everything up. And the support beam goes right in the middle. Without the support beam, you can have walls and windows and doors and furniture and exterior and interior and all kinds of things, but it's useless without that central support beam. And that has to be strong. So therefore, of the three, karma, gyan, and bhakti, it's in the middle. The second example he gives, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives, is when there's a procession. Often in a procession you have a VIP. Where do you place the VIP in the procession? The beginning, in the middle, or the end? In the middle. I remember how that is done in India. First experience I had of a VIP coming was when we had the temple opening in Krishna Balaram Mandir. The governor of UP agreed to come to the opening of the Krishna Balaram temple. And days before the governor got there, there were police spread out everywhere. It was a big deal. The governor's coming. And then when the procession came, there was this military thing out in front. And then in the middle was the governor. And then behind, then it was the days of the ambassadors, the little white ambassadors with the red ball on the roof. And that was the VIPs, you know, the entourage of the ambassador. But he was in the middle. And that's how they left. The police out front, or the military, the governor, and whatever other ministers or the people that assist the governor. Then a third example is if you have valuables, like heirlooms of the family, gold, ornaments, and special things. Where do you keep those special things? He poses three options. At the front gate? In the backyard? Or in the center of the house? We don't have front gates, but here in America, but those of you, I see a few people from India, you know what front gate means. You don't hang it at the front gate. You don't put it in your backyard. You put it safely in the center of the house. Same, this message, this essential message, although the whole of Bhagavad Gita is speaking about devotional service, that which clearly and especially focuses upon Shuddha Bhakti, And the difference between Shuddha Bhakti and anything else is within this middle six chapters. And that gives strength and value and support to the other, whatever it says about karma yoga or jnana yoga. Or because some persons read Bhagavad Gita and think that's what it is. It's about non-fruitive work. Or it's about understanding the Supreme through speculative knowledge. And they'll write their commentaries and explain it in that way. It's actually about bhakti. So understanding these middle six chapters gives strength to properly applying, understanding and applying the other, all the rest of Bhagavad Gita. So we're about to launch into a very important part of Bhagavad Gita. So in this chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita, or Vibhuti Yoga, there are four sections in clusters of verses. And, of course, most important are the Chatur Shloki verses of the whole of Bhagavad Gita are in chapter 10. If you can understand these four verses of Bhagavad Gita, you've understood the whole Bhagavad Gita. You've understood the absolute truth. You've understood Krishna. You're on your way home, back to Godhead. And we're going to discuss those four verses this evening, briefly. So as a prelude to those four verses, Krishna explains to Arjuna something that's very important, and you have to listen very carefully because it's subtle. So turn your radar and antennas up and listen to this message. Krishna explains that that which comes into being cannot possibly know its source or origin without disclosure from the source of its being. Say it again. That which comes into being, that's everything. Everything that we're familiar with anyways. Like who we are. Who we are has a very important component in who we are, is understanding where we came from. But how can you understand where you came from if that where you came from existed before you existed? Before you existed, what existed? You can't know. It's very obvious, but Krishna's stating it. People don't know me. The seven great sages, and before them, the four great sages, and following them, all the demigods, and all the progenitors of mankind, and all the rishis, and nobody knows. For I'm their very source of existence. And then he describes some of the things that he's the source of existence of. And it's a list of everything. Short list. Because everything comes from him. But he's knowable, that from which everything else comes, is knowable if that source discloses. And then he says that those that know this and have faith in this, remember the Shraddhavan Bhajate Yomam? Shraddhavan, those who have faith, and based upon that faith, Bhajate Yomam, they engage in my devotional service. So he says the same thing in the beginning of the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Those who have faith in this fact, then they can know me. And now I'm going to disclose. And so he discloses. Now we're already into the second cluster of verses, the Chatur Shloki verses, where Krishna says, once again, I am the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Matak sarvam pravartate. He says it twice. Just uses different language. I'm the source of everything. Everything comes from me. It's saying the same thing. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. Iti matva, thus knowing, bhajante mam. They engage in my devotional service. Just understanding this one thing. It just happens to be the absolute truth. If you understand what is the nature of the absolute truth, Vedanta asks that question. The absolute truth is that from which everything else comes. That's whatever that is, that's the absolute truth. So Krishna has just declared, I am that, from which everything else comes. Thus knowing, they engage in my devotional service. Buddha bhava samandita. They become wise. They become filled with ecstasy in that devotional service which is engaged in knowing that I am the absolute truth. I'm the source of everything. And then Krishna describes what they do when they're doing that devotional service. What's the nature of that devotional service? The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. That's their internal life. It's always upon Krishna. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. That's their internal life. Whatever their thoughts are with me, their lives are with me. Katayantash chamam nityam tushyanti charamanticha. Everybody wants to be happy. Without exception, everyone wants to be happy. And my devotees are very happy, fully happy. Just katayantash chamam nityam. Just speaking about me, remembering me, devoting their lives to me. Tushyanticha. Ramanticha, they're very satisfied and they're very happy in that God-centered way of life. Now Krishna gets really confidential and he says, he discloses how he feels towards those devotees that are like that, that have understood him as the absolute truth, that engage in his devotional service. Oh, there we go. How confidential can you get? How does Krishna feel towards his unalloyed devotees? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam, to those who are constantly devoted in serving me with love. What does Krishna do? Tadami buddhiyogam tam yena mam upiyantite. I give them the knowledge by which they can come to me. Like step by step. He doesn't just give a map. He takes them by the hand. He takes them by the hand and leads them step by step back to Godhead. That's what Krishna does to those who are thus engaged in devotional service. And the final verse of Chaturshloki is, Krishna addresses the question, what about residual tendency? What about all those years and lifetimes of engagement going in the opposite direction? The tendency to go away from Krishna. The tendency to go away from Krishna. My thoughts are going into. Having just been in India, particularly, I spent some time in South India. And the last time it was a shock, and this time it was a shock, a double shock, to see how swiftly young people in India are going away from Krishna. I mean, it's becoming, it's disgusting. It's shocking. The ways of life of young people in India today, it's just so much like, it's even grosser than America. I don't know if that's a good way to put it, but it's sad. Anyway, going away from Krishna. Prabhupada said that about, you know, America, the people in the West, they're lost. They're so lost that they're trying to find God, heading toward Krishna. And people from India, they're going away from Krishna, but they're closer to him. Just have to turn them around. It's a lot easier. They're looking for... Can something be done about this sound vibration? Residual tendency. If one starts taking up the ways of spiritual life and you're going on the path to Krishna, what about the tendencies for, again, involving oneself in the material energy? You know, in our favorite chosen ways, whatever that is, whatever our flavor of Maya is. Everybody likes a different flavor. Baskin Robbins has however many flavors, and Maya has unlimited flavors. Everyone has their favorite. So what about that tendency? It's like I was visiting in Singapore once, and it was a night flight. All of them seemed to be night flights. So you get in at 1:00 at night, and it's, you know, whew. So I was in the taxi going to the destination, but it was quiet. So I just happened to comment to the cab driver, "You must like driving at night. It's very peaceful." And he just opened up. I was very surprised. He said, "I normally don't have conversation with cab drivers, but especially in places like that, who knows what will happen." So he was quiet. And then he said, "It used to be." I said, "What do you mean, it used to be?" He said, "I used to like driving at night because it was peaceful. But it's not peaceful anymore." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "The kids, they're so rowdy. They're so rude. They're so disrespectful. I'm an old man. And they don't care. They're just loud and rude and obnoxious. And usually they're intoxicated. They're completely drunk. So they're really loud and really obnoxious and say anything. And totally disrespectful. It used to be peaceful, but not anymore." I said, "Wow, I wasn't expecting that kind of response from you." He really let it out. He said, "Half the time when they get in the car and they're rude and loud and obnoxious and disrespectful, they vomit all over the back seat." said, wow, that's really, must be really messy. He said, it's not just messy. After I let them out, I have to clean up. And after I clean up, there's this bad smell. So I can't drive my cab the rest of the night. I just have to go home and air out the back seat of my car. It's not peaceful like it used to be. This happened very recently, this conversation. So, like the bad smell after vomit is cleaned up, there's residual odor. And this tendency of our being involved in material energy, even we may be engaged, we all have our experience. We are engaged in devotional service. And you're going along very nicely in your devotional service. And some impure thought from the past comes into your mind. Where did that come from? It came from your past involvement in the material energy. And there it is, looking ugly, looking you right in the face. And how are you going to respond to that? Devotees ask sometimes, how do I deal with these bad thoughts that come into the mind? And Krishna addresses that, because thoughts, if you don't address the thought properly, it can turn into an action. In fact, had we not been engaged in devotional service, it would have been an action, because it's a reaction to past involvement in the material energy. It just would have been a repeat performance of the same activity in some other covering. So what Krishna says in this final verse of Chaturshloki is that he personally, unto those who have this undivided devotional service, I personally show special mercy by dwelling within their heart. I destroy that darkness born of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. I personally take care of that residual tendency. Don't worry, Arjun, got you covered. Don't worry about it. Don't dwell on that thought. I'll take care of you. Rest assured, it's in my hands. And how does he do it? Aham agyana jamtamaha gyana deepena basvata. With the shining lamp of knowledge, he destroys that agyana jamtamaha, the darkness that's born of ignorance. The darkness that's born of ignorance. Prabhupada has said so many times, the root cause of all suffering is ignorance. And in that ignorance that's born of the dark mode of nature, tamagun, where you can't see and you don't know where you are and what's what and what to do and what's right and what's wrong, and it's all very dark, Krishna personally comes unto those who are fixed in devotions. Krishna's response, Krishna's feelings of reciprocation with those devotees. He comes and illumines the heart with the shining lamp of knowledge. He doesn't let go of our hand. He's given us this assurance that he'll take us to him. But if we're fearful, and while we're going to him, holding his hand, going to his abode, if there's some thought or residual tendency that resurfaces, Krishna addresses it. He takes care of it. So when Arjuna, now we're at the third section of chapter 10, when Arjuna hears these words spoken by Krishna, oh, he's very excited. Oh, Krishna, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Abode, the Supreme Purifier. You're the Absolute Truth. And I'm not just declaring it, but other great sages and so forth, they've declared the same. My dear Lord Krishna, kindly tell me the ways by which I can constantly remember you through all my activity of life. Can you disclose that to me? And then the fourth section is, Krishna discloses that to Arjuna by giving a variety of his transcendental opulences, his vibhutis, concluding by saying, but my dear Arjuna, what's the use of lists of vibhutis? Because you should know that with but a spark of my splendor, I maintain this whole cosmic manifestation by his expansion as the Supersoul. He maintains the whole material thing. So everything can remind you of Krishna if you see that Krishna is the basis and support of it. So here's a little summary of the chapter. Krishna says he's the generating seed of all existence. There's nothing that can exist without Krishna. That's, you know, saying it positive and negative. Krishna is everything. There's nothing outside of Krishna. And the range of Krishna's manifestation knows no end. Everything, conclusion of the chapter, opulent, beautiful, glorious, springs from just a spark of Krishna's splendor. By a single fragment of himself, he pervades and supports the entire universe. There's chapter 10 in a nutshell. And I hope our sound is working.
Yeah.